numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
The Tuesday edition of A Numbers Game is live, presented by Zen, as we're back from downtown Las Vegas. It is Bar Canada at the D. Big show for you today, as I'm Ben Wilson, in again for Gil Alexander for the next couple of days. Drew Dinsick, our pal from NBC Sports and Bet the Edge podcast, you will join us in 15 minutes talking all things French Open and the NBA Finals. We'll also get Paul Spohr, our pal from Fangraphs, on at 11:30 Eastern. And Kelly Bidlin is here. Who says, Kelly, you need NBA, NHL playoff action every day to have some fun watching sports, or at the very least to get frustrated watching and betting sports, as I was as my Oklahoma baseball regional goes down in flames last night.
It is fun this time of year. It is nice to be able to fill the space with some French Open and some college baseball. Especially, I was saying before the show, love it out here on the West Coast because you get the French Open action through the morning, you know, early afternoon. It's awesome. Late yesterday.
The Alexander Zverev Holger Rune match finished at almost 5 p.m. Pacific last night, which, as somebody who grew up pre-lights and night matches at the French Open, it's just such a bizarre feeling to be sitting there, and I'm watching a Brewers Phillies game on one TV and a live French Open match on the other. It was just the trippiest thing ever. But we did get there. It was a sweat and a half there. Zverev wins in five sets over Holger Rune to cash out the second leg there of a money line parlay we gave out yesterday. The bigger news, though, out of the French Open, which we'll dive deeper into with Drew Dinsick here in a few minutes, Novak Djokovic. Man, this guy does it again, Kelly. It is amazing how he feeds off of tension. And he passes Roger Federer, most Grand Slam single match wins all time. Ooh. Passes Fed yesterday with a win over Francisco Cerundolo. Back-to-back, 4.5-plus-hour matches for Djokovic. He didn't finish at 3:07 a.m. this time, but he re-aggravates his right knee in the process, which was giving him trouble anyway coming into the French Open. And now he says he's not sure if he'll suit up tomorrow. Quarterfinals against Casper Ruud, who has faced before in this tournament on the clay in the French Open final in years past. And Ruud is about as good as anybody, non-big three over the last 5-6 years on clay. So we wonder now, A, what's the likelihood that Djokovic even plays? And B, if he does, you have to think Ruud will be very, very live in that match. But that was the big story coming out of yesterday. And it was amazing to watch Djokovic. His level has clearly fallen off, yet he still just finds ways against these players with lesser mental fortitude to just grind it out. And it is something, it's a sight to behold. He did you see the hydroplane yesterday, Kelly, where he ends up on his stomach? It was nuts.
I saw that. I saw, maybe this happens more at French Open and Wimbledon than I've realized, but I know these guys, and especially Djokovic, with some of the bigger egos. Like in the NBA, they'll mouth off right at the umpires and people. I don't know if I've ever seen someone working at the facilities managers get called out like Novak was going off yesterday.
It was truly wild.
I felt like he was yelling at poor Fred back in the tunnel about how crappy the clay was raked. Right,
I was just cracking up. Jim Courier on commentary for tennis channels going like, you know, Jim Courier, great tennis player. And he's going audibly asking on the broadcast, like, what is he asking them to do? This makes no sense. Like, what is sweeping the court? It's the French Open. It's center court. It's in pristine shape. Like, what is he talking about?
Well,
it's all just a show.
It wasn't his point, too. It's not like it's changed throughout the match, right? You know, it's the same thing from at the beginning. So that was pretty crazy. But like you said, Djokovic, it is still so impressive to watch. And you summed it up well, man. Mental fortitude. These younger guys just don't stand a chance in those moments when he's like that. Ruud -130, Djokovic +105 up at DraftKings right now for that match. Djokovic out to 6-1 in the futures, in the futures market. Still haven't bet on him, but I'm not betting against him, Ben. I don't care how bad his knee is.
You're still not betting against him.
I'm still not betting against the dude. No.
Ruud goes from 11-1 to 7-1 in the futures market. And you talk about that top half of the draw. Not only is Ruud now a favorite against Djokovic, and I would say the one, depending on the book, some books it just needs to go a set for action, but the one worry you would have of, you know, not only are you laying a price against Djokovic, which is the ultimate bottom of his market if you are Casper Ruud and wanting to bet on him, but you know, the odds of this match doesn't finish, Kelly. I mean, who's to say? There's a re-aggravation there. I mean, I'm sure, you know, Djokovic will be taking the good stuff if he is going to try to suit up. But there's also a very real possibility that match doesn't even finish, and you might not even be able to capitalize on that ticket or sort of in match betting, so to speak. So you look at the top half of the draw. You've Root at 7-1. Alexander Zverev is over a $2 favorite tomorrow, who barely got there yesterday. He is pacing Alex de Minaur, and Zverev has played back-to-back five-setters on his own, Kelly. I mean, this is over eight matches of on-court time. So Ruud from just a pure, and Ruud wins in four sets over Taylor Fritz, the American, yesterday. Ruud's had a couple of four-setters, but none that have gone the distance. So just purely, if you're talking odd standpoint, based on who is the immediate path, quarterfinals against a guy who is less than 100% health, who's been on court for over 9 hours each of the last two matches combined, and then your opponent in the semifinals, potentially, if the favorite result holds, is a guy in Alexander Zverev, who has also had back-to-back five-set matches and has clearly struggled with his own form at times as big, big favorites who has had to go the distance in those. Casper, now, this is probably the last chance, I would say, at 7-1 where it makes sense to get a future on him, since you avoid seeing the two favorites, Carlos Alcaraz, Jannik Sinner. Those are two on the bottom half of the draw. Those are also two players who have dealt with their own injury issues and have been less than 100% coming into this tournament. So I would say, if you haven't done so already, this would be the time here for Ruud. Personally, Zverev was my pick this top half of the draw, and with each match, you grow less and less confident. He's found a way to get through him, Kelly, but he just drives you crazy with some of the unforced errors, and which has really, in turn, led him to playing a lot more tennis than he should have had to have played at this point.
Yeah, it's I had great points all around on that, on the top half there, and in the Ruud. The pricing is just interesting when you talk match versus futures book, right? Because you've got Ruud's the favorite in the match, longer on the futures board than Novak. I understand the history is there and the win equity if you want to go there with Novak Djokovic as far as just winning Grand Slams. But, you know, I think that's a great point. You're already getting longer odds in the futures market, and if there is a chance that match doesn't finish and your match bet is
voided. Yeah.
Yeah, it gets voided. So yeah, I think maybe if you are looking at that match, at least be sprinkling here in the futures market, if not just disregarding the match bet altogether.
No question. Today we are in the first of the two quarterfinals on the bottom half of the draw. Jannik Sinner is in complete command right now. He was a $4 favorite against Grigor Dimitrov, who finally made his first French Open quarter, a guy who's had so many injuries throughout his career. Sinner is already up a set and a break there, so well on his way. Stefanos Tsitsipas, Carlos Alcaraz. Alcaraz over a $4 favorite. That's set to get underway just after 2 p.m. Eastern time. On the women's side, it was hilarious, Kelly. After the show, our guy J-Rod was tweeting that I was using propaganda yesterday. I love some of the words that were coming out of yesterday. Propaganda, slander.
I like twisting your words.
You do like twisting my words. Iga Swiatek
blasted Iga Swiatek yesterday on the air.
I basically said she was never going to win another match, is what I said yesterday. She beats Marketa Vondrousova 0-2. So if you're keeping score at home, that is the last two matches Iga has won four sets to none, losing a combined two games. Not bad. And Coco Gauff rallied today on Jabeur, who suddenly found some form in this tournament. Jabeur was just unbettable the better part of 4 months, but has really found something, and she pushed Coco Gauff there really, really hard. Gauff comes from a set down to win that match, so it sets up a Coco Gauff Iga Swiatek semifinals, which will go up later on in the week, and the early pricing on that, just checking my odds screen here for the update there, I'm seeing Swiatek at least offshore about -735. So that gives you an idea. As good as Coco Gauff is, you would be stunned even to see her take a set.
Yeah,
off
minus
of
800 to DK.
DK up to -800. Yeah, Swiatek -215 now to win the French. Tomorrow we'll have the other two quarterfinals there. Jasmine Paolini, Elena Rybakina. Rybakina, a big favorite. Mira Andreeva and Aryna Sabalenka over a $4 favorite there. So, yes, Swiatek does, in fact, make me eat my words of her never winning a match ever again, as she wins 0-2 today.
That's right.
That was fun stuff. That's our tennis update. We'll dive into it deeper with Drew Dinsick in a little bit, but I do think we did kind of identify, Kelly, the bet to make here if you are, depending on your portfolio, if you still believe that you want to get involved to your futures market, because this is honestly the first French Open men's side in two decades where you could make a compelling case for five different players winning the tournament. Even at this stage, we're inside the round of 16 now, down to some of the quarterfinal matchups, and that's what we have going on right now. The other thing, too, so there was college baseball last night. The Super Regionals are set. Unfortunately, this is where it gets into, we live in this little, our own sports betting bubbles. It matters a lot to us. Might not matter to as many people as far as total handle, rest of country. So DraftKings has not posted anything. There is, I see one book that has posted some super regional futures, Kelly, but they are very slow to trickle out, and the books that are posting are not making it very favorable, at least on the straddle that they're taking. So yeah. Be patient, I would say, if you're a college baseball bettor. But we can give some initial thoughts because we did wrap up all the regionals last night. There was that. Did you see any of that North Carolina LSU game? That was nuts.
Did watch a little bit of that. I watched a little bit of Oklahoma State Florida because my Oklahoma State ticket went down. That was pretty wild too. What was it? Like three straight games where they had fan interference. Basically for home runs in that game or that series. Like, that was nuts.
You see some weird stuff in college baseball. Yeah, I mean, credit to UConn, who, I mean, blitzed through that was a really good region. Oklahoma, Duke, UConn comes out of it as the 3 seed. We had the other one, Evansville,
yep.
The 4 seed, massive upset over East Carolina. So, yeah, I mean, it can tend to be a chalkier sport, but if anything, this last weekend plus yesterday, Kelly, it proved you aren't going to get by just totally betting the favorites every single time, every single year in this with college baseball. You can have upsets galore, and man, did we have some over the weekend here. And now it makes for a super regional where I don't know how attractive the pricing is going to be, because you still have the behemoths who are there, the Tennessees, the Texas A&Ms of the world. They're now just laying ginormous prices against some of these teams that made the dream run, like Tennessee. Evansville is going to be impossible to bet. It just is. You want to lay $7 on Tennessee in a best 2 of 3 series? I mean, go for it.
Yeah, I'm good.
It's hard. Can't do it. Tennessee, the number 1 seed, still in. They will get Evansville, the 1-4 seed who made it out of regionals. We'll talk more college baseball later. On the other side, Drew Dinsick on the French Open, on the NBA Finals. A lot still to come here on the Tuesday edition of A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Act now and save big for a limited time. Get an annual subscription to VSiN Pro at an unbeatable price. Normally $240 a year. You can now subscribe for just $199, and we'll throw in an extra month for free. That's 13 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day. With VSiN Pro, you'll gain instant access to our daily best bets, real-time betting splits, exclusive betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video content. Don't miss this incredible offer. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe right now and use promo code ANG to claim your discount and bonus month. This special deal won't last long. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe today and use promo code ANG. Just getting started here on the Tuesday edition of A Numbers Game with Kelly Bidlin. I'm Ben Wilson. We did discover, Kelly, another book that is offering college baseball super regional prices. So that's good. Now we just have to comb through.
It'll be slowly coming up this morning.
Slowly coming out. We get impatient here, you know.
We give us the odds.
We
it doesn't matter what the sport is. When is stuff going to get posted? Do it now.
And of course, there's one underdog that I really want to bet here for supers, and I'm just like, come on, give me a fair price. Give me a representative price. Not this -175 +135 stuff. But whatever, we'll figure it out. As we wait for the college baseball futures to come out, we go out to our progressive guest line where Drew Dinsick, he's been up for several hours watching French Open tennis, talking some French Open. We'll talk some NBA in a little bit as well with Drew. You see him on NBC Sports Edge and the Deep Dive podcast. Drew joining us right now here. All right, Drew, it's fair to say, right? It's been about 2 decades since you could make a compelling case for 5 different players winning a French Open. I mean, really, since Nadal came onto the scene in the mid-2000s. And yet, one of the guys here at the top, Novak Djokovic, has the re-aggravation of the knee injury yesterday. We're not even sure if he'll go tomorrow against Casper Ruud. A, how likely do you see Djokovic playing? And B, is it a fair market price now to see Ruud adjusted to the favorite in that match, betting-wise?
Well, as we stand here today recording, Dimitrov looks likely out, so we're down to 7. And if we were to do a draft of who do you think is the most likely to win, and we went back and forth, Djokovic is probably the last pick right now. And it is because of the injury. And even if he were healthy, like, this is a really tough road for him. He's going to have to go through Ruud and then potentially Alexander Zverev. I mean, if Zverev even beats Dimitrov, Zverev has played a lot of tennis as well. But it's crazy that the only guy here with pedigree the only guy here who has won the French Open before, the defending champion, would be the last choice of those remaining. And it really kind of comes down to the fact that he did not come into this clay season with purpose, with fitness, and kind of, you know, missed his opportunities to put together sustained run on clay in preparation for this event. And because of that, he's been a little bit lacking some of the sharpness that you expect from Grand Slam Novak Djokovic. And what that did, that opened the door for Lorenzo Musetti in the night match on Saturday to take the second and third sets and make that a five setter. That match ended at 3:15 in the morning local time. It is by far the latest finish that we have ever had for a French Open match in history. Back in the day, they didn't used to have a roof or lights on the main court at the French Open. And so, you know, it would get to be 9:30. It was like sunset-ish, and it would, there'd be a curfew. Sunset, guys, pack it up. You know, it's like, this is a break point, a deciding set. What do you mean packing? Oh, the sunset, guys. I don't know what to tell you. I wish there was something we could do about this. But now they have lights, and they have kind of leaned into the other direction, which is we will make these guys play till infinity. And while that was amazing for those of us who wanted to watch tennis in, you know, prime time on the West Coast that was taking place in Europe, it was not great for the players. And Djokovic was pretty clearly physically ailing when he came back out for his match against Cerundolo yesterday. And, you know, watching the start of that match, I was pulling my hair out like Cerundolo, like, dude, like, you have an injured animal here.
It's a no-show like, for a set.
No showing in the first set, and like, you know, just kind of not really playing with purpose or focus, or, you know, it was very, very frustrating to watch. And then he finally started to dial it up in the second set. He takes the third. He had Djokovic absolutely dead to rights in the fourth. He was probably 2 or 3 points away from a win there. If he holds and then, you know, kind of puts Djokovic on defense to stay in the match at the end of the fourth set, it's probably over. Djokovic breaks back. He gets the crowd behind him. The meds kick in, or whatever he was taking to try to absolve the knee pain, and the rest is history. He wins in five, but the damage done by spending as much time on court as he has in his last two rounds is not something that you can solve by treatment. It's not something you can solve by recovery. And you know, just, oh, by FYI, if you didn't know, Djokovic's entire team, his nutritionist, his strength and conditioning coach, his tactical coach, all of them have been kind of dispatched this year in 2024. So he, you know, if he found the miracle new team that could get him right for this quarterfinal match, then, you know, maybe we have a match on our hands. The market was extremely unimpressed by what they saw from Djokovic yesterday, and, you know, was a quick bet against in the opening money line against Casper Ruud in the quarterfinal. And then today the news has been sort of swirling that he's had now initial checks on his knee after the match. He's had an MRI today. I doubt that there's any structural damage, but this is all sort of kind of evidence that he, you know, not evidence, but just like the you know, laying the groundwork for a walkover, a withdrawal here,
sure,
which wouldn't be crazy. Like he, you know, I think if you gave him priorities and you're like, you know, hey, do you want to risk the next 2 months of your, you know, kind of, you know, the twilight of your career here? Do you want to waste those next 2 months recovering from a more significant knee injury? Or do you want to be right for a Wimbledon crown chance and the Olympics, right? Like, there are two massive events coming up this summer that I think he has priority over winning this championship. And like, look, if everybody else had crashed and burned and there was like, I just got to beat a couple of every, you know, some journeymen here to get to a title, then that would be one thing. But he's going to have to go through the best defender that we've seen to this point in the tournament in Casper Ruud. He's going to have to go through the best service that we've seen in this tournament in Alexander Zverev. And then he's going to have to play an absolute blue chip player, the likes of Sinner most likely, Alcaraz second most likely, Tsitsipas third most likely, to actually win the title. And that is, that right there is a gauntlet. Setting aside what he's already done. So I think expecting a walkover is at least 50-50, if not more.
It was 7-1 in match, yeah, yesterday. 7-1.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And I looked at it and I said, I looked at it, I watched it, I'm like, nah, I'm good. And yeah, he came back and won. But, yeah. You know, I think realistically this title is still very wide open. You know, I would not give, even though he spent the fewest amount of minutes on court or played the fewest amount of games in this tournament, I do not give Alex de Minaur a realistic chance to win. But everybody else in that mix right there in the top six it has a shot. The top five in particular, as you excuse Djokovic, I think are the most interesting. My future price is on Rude. It's not gained as much equity as it ought to have. I think dream setup for me is Rude comes through in a walkover. He gets de Minaur in a semifinal where de Minaur is just wildly overmatched. And then the bottom half just turns into an absolute war. Like, I bet Tsitsipas to beat Alcaraz outright today. I think Tsitsipas plus six is also a good bet today against Alcaraz. And I for me at least, Tsitsipas versus Sinner would be a very physical, very long match. Hopeful that Tsitsipas could do a little bit of damage on Sinner. Otherwise, Sinner's winning this thing.
Drew Dinsick with us here on a numbers game. Yannick Sinner, we're watching in studio right now. Drew just took the second set, so he's up after 6-2, 6-4 there on Grigor Dimitrov, well on his way. And so it's funny because you say, all right, Sinner 1, Alcaraz 2, Tsitsipas 3, where the odds certainly don't reflect that with Alcaraz, as a popular guy, has been priced through the moon here, plus 125 on the futures board. What have you seen, even though Alcaraz has not been really tested yet, still had some injury concerns coming in, Drew, and how much of that are you leading into being a potential cause for upset today with Tsitsipas?
Yeah, so I've watched every minute of Alcaraz playing in this tournament. I've been wildly unimpressed by his opponents, outside of Jesper Dejong, did show up and played very, very competitively. And that was kind of the match to key on for me, because the Alcaraz injury is a forearm injury. It's, I think, technically an elbow, but they're being very cautious about what they're calling it, and they're calling it a forearm. It is impacting the way he uses his forearm. His forearm is his most dangerous weapon, and it's not close. He has a whipping foot, like a violent whipping motion with his forearm that generates power and speed and spin in ways that are very difficult to handle, even on clay where you have, a relatively slow surface. We haven't seen that at all in 2024. We saw flashes of it at Indian Wells. I have not seen it once on clay. He has lost matches on clay that he otherwise should have easily won. To me, it's because he has not really had that part of his arsenal. I haven't seen it at this tournament, and he's going to need it to beat Tsitsipas, because Tsitsipas, at least for what has been a very weird clay season, has the best numbers overall in terms of his production. So he's playing the best, I think, overall tennis right now on clay, and I think he's going to get the better of Alcaraz today. But mostly I'm just kind of appalled at that price. The market is basically saying this is 80-20, which is nonsense. Like, this is going to be a very close match. And I mean, if peak Alcaraz from last summer shows up, where he was minus 450-ish, I think, against Tsitsipas in the quarterfinals and handled him comfortably, then I will be blown out of my chair. But it's possible.
Sure. Alcaraz minus as high as minus 460 there in the market. Drew, we're going to keep you another segment, if that's all right. NBA Finals talk next. We can always talk so much tennis. Great discussion here with a whole lot of carnage going on in Paris. We'll talk NBA Finals with Drew as we keep him on next. We continue right here on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
This segment of A Numbers Game is brought to you by Zyn Nicotine Pouches. There's only one number one draft pick. There's only one champion at the end of the season. And there's only one nicotine pouch brand in America that outsells the rest, and that's Zyn. So what makes Zyn number one? Here are the stats. Zyn is a smoke-free, spit-free, hassle-free nicotine pouch that can be enjoyed anywhere, anytime. It's available in 10 varieties and 2 strengths, and is made with only 6 simple ingredients. Plus, it delivers up to 1 hour of nicotine satisfaction per pouch. Whether you're managing your fantasy lineup on the go, watching the game from the stands, or cheering on your favorite team from the couch, you can get the nicotine satisfaction you want with Zyn. Not sure if Zyn is for you? Give it a try with our 10-day trial. Find your Zyn at Zyn.com/Zyn10. That's Zyn, Zyn.com/Zyn10. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Continuing on A Numbers Game as we're back from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D. We had so much fun talking French Open with Drew Dinsick in our last segment, Kelly, that we didn't even get to the NBA Finals.
That's right. We didn't even get to the women's side.
We didn't even get to the women's side. But alas, here we are. Yes, we did not get to the women's side, where Iga Świątek wins big today. Anja Burr wins in three over Coco Gauff. We're talking NBA Finals now with Drew Dinsick. Again, you follow him at @whale_capper. Back on our Progressive Guest Line, analyst for NBC Sports and the Deep Dive podcast. As far as the series price here, Drew, just to start things off with Boston and Dallas here, Boston over a $2 favorite here, Dallas in the +185 range or so. How fair of a price do you have that as we get set for game one Thursday night?
Well, you know, again, no shade to the women at the French Open, but it's a foregone conclusion that Iga is going to win. But even at the outright price of -215, I make the Celtics more likely champions than Iga Świątek at the French Open. Yeah, I mean, you want to start with the kind of the series market, which looks broken to me. That's kind of an interesting discussion. You want to start with the game market, which I think is not mature yet because we're waiting on confirmation that Porzingis plays. I think the series price is maybe more fascinating because the game market right now is 6.5. The game money line implies a 69% chance that the Celtics win game one. You would expect that carries over to game two with no major injuries if Porzingis is ruled in for game one and then available for game two. Maybe that's 71, 72%. It doesn't take a math genius to know that games three and game four, if games one and two are priced this way, three and four are going to be about a pick 'em, guys, which means you can carry through 71%, 71%, 50%, 50%, and kind of get a very clear picture of what fair price is for the series for the Celtics. And guess what? It's not in the -200s. This is a very, very weird and difficult series market to square with the game markets that we currently are looking at. And I've been obsessing about this for a couple of days because I'm holding lots of Celtics equity at much better prices than -210. We've known for a while that this was going to be, that the finals was going to be Celtics versus either Mavericks or Timberwolves, probably Mavericks. And so we've had lots of time to, everybody's had lots of time to get Celtics exposure they wanted to at prices that didn't make sense. And here we are. And sure enough, this still is not making sense. Nobody is correcting this is clear and obvious error in the series price market, considering what the game number is. And I find it pretty fascinating. So if you have kind of any type of math model where you're using, any type of simulation to come up with what series fare ought to be, it is telling you to bet the Celtics -210, but you're staring at your book and you already have it, so you're not betting it. And if you have any type of, I'm betting with my gut, I want the best player in the series, I think Dallas has got their number, or, you could even have a math model that is upweighting Dallas's results since the trade deadline when they've been a very different team. And you could say that the market is really still not caught up with how good the Mavericks are. All of these are plausible explanations, but you know what you're going to do if you have all of those opinions? You're going to bet Mavericks +6. You're not going to bet +175, right? And so I think, like, if I'm a ticket writer, if I'm running a book and I'm writing series bets, you're getting one-way donkey action on Mavericks series right now, I think. And I think you're pretty happy to write all the +175s, all the +180s you want to write, because fair is kind of more in the +3. I'll say like fundamentally, it's more in like the high threes. My fair for the series is -420 Celtics, +420 Mavericks. And I think ultimately that, this being an 80-20 type of split here is kind of just speaks to the fact that the Celtics are, they are kind of being slept on largely because they have played no one. And because we haven't even really seen them have to go to playoff rotation minutes to this point in the playoffs, which is crazy. And so I think, we don't really know what the ceiling is for this team, and I think they match up especially well offense versus Mavericks defense, but that's maybe like a little bit of a deeper discussion here. As far as the kind of game one market goes, I think there are people still on the sidelines waiting for best number on Mavericks who, again, feel strongly that the Mavericks are, somewhat similar strength team based on all the data that they've collected since the trade deadline. But again, with the Porzingis news kind of looming and kind of one last adjustment coming, I think they're waiting for sevens, maybe 7.5s. My fare for game one would be Dallas plus seven, Boston minus seven. Obviously, is worth a look at minus 6.5 before we get confirmation there. And I'm only projecting 20 minutes for Porzingis, by the way, when I'm coming up with all my fares here. So if he ends up being more, healthy and more able to contribute than 20 minutes would suggest, then this could be even more favorable for Boston. But for me, the key standout number as I look at what I'm projecting for a given game in the Garden versus what the market is telling us is that there is a lot more respect for the Dallas defense than I have currently in my market for this matchup, expecting that the Celtics are going to come in around 111 points, I don't think is giving them especially fair credit for how good that offense is compared to pretty clear and obvious mismatches that they have going up against the Mavericks defense. So Mavericks defense, I think, benefited a lot in the last series going up against the tired T-Wolves team and really just a kind of an out of gas Anthony Edwards. Now you have a much fresher and kind of two-headed attack that is similarly capable of getting to the rim and creating opportunities for their outside shooters. The Mavericks tend to let you shoot from three, and the Celtics obviously love to do that. They shoot well at home. This could be just a bury them by threes early and often in this series. And as I kind of look at the exotic markets, the appetite to lay minus 210 isn't really there for me, even though, again, my series fare is, minus 420. I'm into Boston minus 2.5 games. I think them protecting home court in game one and two and then splitting in Dallas is very realistic. And then my most likely series outcome at 25, a little over 25%, 27.4%. Is the Celtics win this 4-1. I have about a 16% chance that the Celtics sweep. So between those two, I'm perfectly happy to lay Boston minus 2.5 games here in the plus money price you're getting. This could be a pretty impressive performance that we get to see here from the Celtics. So, excited to kind of check in with you guys next week and we can decide what to do when the Celtics are down 0-2.
That's right. Drew, I want to go back to that real quick with the game series betting, though, because I thought it was a great conversation. Bet the Edge is the podcast. You and Jay Croucher on there. That was a great conversation. I caught it on the ride in this morning talking about the game and series pricing. So I'm going to spin it this way. If you're looking to bet the Mavericks, I'm still not running to bet now because I'm with you. I think we're going to see a 7, maybe even a 7.5 pop once we get Porzingis ruled in officially. Shams, what? I just got a notification on my phone. Expected to play in game one, but I think that we already kind of knew that already. I don't know if that's really news there. And Celtics series price, though, if there are people that are looking at that, do you expect a late wave of money coming in here? Because it's only been movement towards Dallas so far. So I'm wondering how many real sharp guys are sitting on the sidelines just waiting to get a better number.
Yeah, there definitely could be. As far as I can tell you, the sharp guys, the highly liquid guys who are playing into the NBA markets, if at this point, if you have an edge on a team, I think you're attacking the game market more than you're attacking the series market because the liquidity pool is deeper. And I also think that you maybe have stacked enough equity on the Celtics over the balance of the last 2 months that you're just happy with your position and you're not betting anymore. But maybe I'm crazy. I don't think this is like bet of a lifetime type of stuff like Mayweather McGregor or anything even close, right? Like there are still a lot of unknowns about this series, this matchup. Celtics play with their food, Mavericks play with their food. Like these could all come down to very, very close call games, and Celtics have not been covering lately. You could very much make an argument that did we see the peak of this team during the regular season and now they're not quite as sharp, not quite as good, a little bit tired. Guards playing very, very, hard defense last series, like are those guys running out of gas? Like there are certainly uncertainties here that make the door still open, but for me it's Celtics or pass.
He is Drew Dinsick. Give him a follow at @whale_capper. Drew, always good, man, to see you. Enjoy hopefully Dimitrov can push center a little bit here in this third set, but thanks as always for the time.
Best luck, guys.
On serve there in the third set, Kelly. One all as we'll come back, reset, talk some Major League Baseball, a couple bets I like for the action tonight. We'll discuss it next year on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We are so close to crowning an NBA champ, and with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New to DraftKings, listen up. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5, and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VSIN. The crown is yours. Big thanks to Drew Dinsick for giving us not one but two segments here on A Numbers Game. Grigor Dimitrov and Yannick Sinner on serve right now in the third set. Sinner up two sets to love there. And we do have a few more tweets today, Kelly. Most of them, as you would expect, in the talking about the French Open and Iga Swiatek and my utter hate for her, apparently. This is good from Mike Zill. Says, Alex the Minotaur, actually an actual Minotaur. Is he a fake one like the one A-Rod had commissioned for his living room painting with his head and torso? I don't even know. That's so funny.
Is that a real thing?
Yeah. Have you not seen that?
Or did I already forget about this?
I mean,
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. I do remember
that's
this.
That's really,
it's
really good. Yeah. That is really, really good.
Of course, the other one that pops up was that the strange whatever magazine shoot he did where he was like staring at himself in the mirror and stuff.
A-Rod. Never change A-Rod. For Brian, I think we need to credit my denigration. That's a great word. Denigration of Iga for the dominant win this morning. we have a denigration, slander. We've had some good words.
Those just tuning in today, I'm pretty sure all that Ben said was
propaganda. Another one
that Sabalenka wasn't that much far away from Iga
on non-clay surfaces too. I said on non-clay, but this is good. Prime time after my expletive-filled rant describing his utter hate for Iga, perhaps a visit from a crafty situational saxophone player could help soften things between he and Numbers Game listeners. Yes, Prime time knows that I was in the jazz band in high school playing alto sax.
And
I was also a crafty left-hander, situational lefty. We shared that story yesterday of my situational lefty. If you're a high school baseball pitcher, equates to you're not very good.
But. Man, you had a lot to carry to school every day. Yeah, bring a saxophone, bring your baseball bag. What else?
My giant tennis bag.
The classic thing
was if you weren't very good at tennis, you would just, like, the worse you were at tennis in high school, the bigger the bag you would get to just help overcome your insecurities. So I had the giant backpack that went down, like, below my tailbone.
Yeah, you put, like, four rackets in there and always blame it on the racket.
Yeah, of course.
Something's wrong with this one.
Hey, you put all your stuff. So, of course, the one thing I wouldn't bring was my actual backpack for, like, school. And I'm like, yeah, who cares? I got other stuff going on.
Oh,
I want to be a sports broadcaster. Why do we have to go to chemistry class?
Like, it cracks you up when you see these kids that are about to topple over carrying 17 different bags like that.
And what's hilarious is I remember my first ever high school match. The guy had an even bigger bag than I did, and I was like,
"Oh, I'm in trouble."
And then it was that was the double bagel. I was like, and the guy, should not have had a big bag anyway. Anyway, we get tweets. We appreciate it. As always, best listeners on and viewers on the network here, A Numbers Game. All right, Kelly, we will talk some college baseball a little bit later now that we are getting some regional prices slowly trickling out, super regional prices, I should say, slowly trickling out. But how about some Major League Baseball here for today? I do have a couple plays while we're kind of in this limbo time, right, waiting for supers. And yesterday, I don't know if you saw any of that, the Phillies-Brewers game. That was kind of the big series here, the two divisional leaders going at it. And Rhys Hoskins got a great, it was cool. moment. He got a great welcome there to Milwaukee. Ends up hitting a home run in his return to Philadelphia, where he hit almost 200 homers there in his time in Philly. But the Phils get the win there as big favorites because the Brewers were throwing a bullpen game, which sounds like will be the same thing here today. So at least it was impressive for Philly. Man, it seems like the market though is at the absolute peak there for the Phils, as they are, you know, you're laying almost $2 against a fellow division favorite right now. Their lead continues to increase there in the NL East, but. That was awfully impressive.
Yeah, they're looking good, and those division odds, man, they just keep skyrocketing in Philly way.
Let me talk about though the team that is chasing them. That is the Atlanta Braves and Max Fried. So Fried and the Red Sox start a series today. So that's now up to 7 games the lead here for Philadelphia. Atlanta idle yesterday. But you do have Fried who goes today, taking on. He goes, just updating my odd screen now. Fried is a $1.66 favorite at DraftKings, $1.65 consensus against Cutter Crawford there, going to Fenway Park and taking on the Red Sox. Look, Fried has been so consistent and has really bounced back after a slow start. I don't know what it is about March and April, Kelly, but Fried is. It's this weird thing that's actually kind of a weird betting vehicle for us because he always gets off to slow starts. the numbers get skewed as a result, but he is really, really good. He's on pace for his third straight sub-3 ERA season despite getting shelled in his first couple of starts. I've noticed some big regression things, too, on Boston, specifically against lefties. They have the number one BABIP, batting average on balls in play. They're over 330, specifically against lefties, yet are just 20th in WRC+, 21st in hard hit rate. Essentially what that's saying is Boston is really not making quality contact whatsoever. They're not putting together quality ABs against lefties, but they have had an inordinate amount of soft base hits drop to the degree you would expect it to come back. And while not all regression is created equal, this is the perfect time for it to come back to earth when you have a pitcher as elite as Max Fried, as a southpaw who's putting up great, great numbers. It would be even better if you took out his first couple of starts going back to late March, early April. Max Fried, as a result, I will play on him today. I'm going under 5.5 hits allowed for Fried today. That was a minus 119 price, averaging about 4.5 hits allowed per start, and I like the negative regression here factor with Red Sox against lefties.
I like it. I like it. A couple for you today.
Two. We do have two. Hey, it's the Florida Man special today. Remember when they played this series at Disney World?
Yeah.
Rays Marlins. They would play at Disney World, and they would do all the. It was a whole handicapping thing of like, well, the Rays are 8-1 in their last 9 Disney World games. It was. And you would get scores like 12-10, and it just looked so, so bizarre. Rays at the Marlins. This is not at Disney World. It is at the Lone Depot Park there in Miami. I am looking to this is a full game handicap for me. Rays, I bet this overnight minus 113, which you can still find a couple of books. Consensus price minus 120 for Ryan Pepio against Jesus Luzardo. Tampa Bay, I'm looking at some positive regression for them, also against lefties. That's kind of the theme today. Tampa Bay actually 10th best hard hit rate against lefties this season, yet they just have not gotten rewarded for it whatsoever and are facing a lefty in Jesus Luzardo, whose barrel rate allowed, which is the hardest of the hard hit balls, is over 10%. It's the fifth worst record in Major League Baseball. On the flip side, you get a really good starter in Ryan Pepio, who is expecting to also have some positive regression here. 3.88 ERA versus an expected ERA of 2.99. His third start back after a short IL stint. I really like Pepio coming over from the Dodgers in the Tyler Glasnow trade. Young arm, very, very live, and has the ability, even though they haven't let him go super deep in games, but with the right matchup, can really eat up some innings. Miami has struggled all season. Tied for 24th in WRC+. That's just my favorite metric here for measuring overall production. And that's tied for 24th in WRC+, specifically against righties. Rays, to me, I'm not giving up yet, Kelly. It's a good buy low team in the right situation. I like them today basically as a pick'em price on the road against the Marlins there at minus 113.
Yeah, I like it. Not like the Marlins have been setting the world on fire.
They have
that,
not.
So.
Nah, they have not. Did you ever go to any of those games at Disney World?
No. I think I made two at the new Marlins Stadium.
Oh, you've been to the new Marlins Stadium?
Yeah.
How was that?
It was really nice.
I would describe it as cavernous, but that's mostly because there's nobody there.
Yeah, right.
So
I was there. I think both games I went to were the first season it was open. So, I moved out here not much longer after that. But they were nice. But you know what's great about Marlins games, though, and some of these teams, Ben, is you can really spread out, bring an iPad with you. I think I was watching like NBA or something on my iPad while the Marlins were playing. So.
You lay down across like 4 seats. It's like when you're on an international flight and they get the whole
right. Exactly.
Row is
it's
empty.
It's like how nice is a flight when it's empty? Yeah. It's sad if you're a fan of the franchise, but when you go to a game, it's nice to have a little breathing room around you.
You ever go to games when they played it? Well, I mean, I refer to it as Joe Robbie Stadium, like the baseball. Oh, yeah. When you would see those home run balls, and then it would take at least like 10 minutes for the nearest fan to get to the home run ball.
Oh, that was me. That was one of the greatest summers, I would say, of my life during college. I was doing an internship down in that area. Me and a few friends, we all decided to get season tickets for the fish tank, is what they used to call that.
Oh, nice.
Ben, that little the section out in right field, because left was a little higher. And we'd go after work like almost every single night. Again, sit out there, nobody else is around.
That's
enjoy
so
your
cool.
We'd bring our own beers.
Why not?
Very easy to sneak them in. We'd sit out there and we'd chat it up with whoever was in right field basically all night long for both teams.
So good.
I mean, you can have a conversation without basically, you don't even have to yell. There's nobody out there like you're talking about. It got to the point where there were home runs hit where we'd be like, all right, whose turn is it to like try to run for that thing? Like that's
they come back an inning and a half later. I need a beer. I got the baseball. What's my reward? Anyway, that's Rays Marlins tonight.
Marlins baseball.
Great favorite stuff. The fun fact for today: Brewers are starting Jared Koenig for the second straight game. Kelly, when's the last time you saw that happen?
Wow,
he's an opener.
He's an opener. Okay.
And he's already done.
How often does that happen, though?
I can tell you, it was about 2 weeks ago. Jared Koenig, he started two straight games for the Brewers. Before that, I have no idea.
Okay.
Hey, Brewers, they're inventive. Those Milwaukee Brewers, as they are taking on Christopher Sanchez there and the Philadelphia Phillies today. That's our number one in the books for us here on A Numbers Game. We will reset, get some NBA Finals Game 1 thoughts on the other side.